You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 2nd of October. We've got Federal Reserve balance sheet data due 10:30 tonight. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios, Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Alan Robin Lacabella from Perpetua. Capitec results, really strong results. And maybe that crazy valuation is justified with these type of numbers. Tim Edwards from S&P, their latest S&P indexation versus active report. And then Kingsley Williams from Satrix, they're reducing the total expense ratio on one of their large ETFs. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, SA Bank's Step Up Africa Drive amid fintech rivalry. Moody's warns that digital competitors are already eroding banks' market share. And Business Day, Truist battles credit risk as online value fashion rivals close in. Group says fast fashion retailers selling directly online to local shoppers are reshaping the market. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P up 0.33%, NASDAQ 0.5% higher. Over in the East, it is all green. We've got Sydney up and Tokyo 0.6%. We've got Hong Kong up 0.5% and Tencent up 2.2%. Commodities, however, all red. Gold futures, 3,885. Brent, 65.67. Platinum, 1,597. And palladium, 1,294. The rand, 17.21. Bitcoin, 119,000. And our top 40 opening call, 915 points to the green. That is 0.9% higher.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Lon Wabo Nkabela. He is Perpetua Investment Managers. Lon Wabo, appreciate the early morning, as always, the Capitec numbers. As I said in the intro there, I mean, you know, we've got HEPS up more than 20%, dividend up more than 20%. There's some T's and C's. There are some bits that we could argue are one-off, but a strong set of numbers that maybe justifies what is, relative to the other banks in South Africa, a high valuation. Your thoughts on the numbers and the valuations around Capitec?
Good morning, Simon. Good to chat to you again. Yes, I think one of my colleagues said that they've now run out of adjectives to describe the results. But it was really a fantastic result, reporting that 8 billion rand. I thought it was interesting, actually, that that's nearly the same number that Nedbank earned over the first half of 2025.
Yeah.
So I think there are quite a few stats that really just back these numbers. I probably can call out a couple of them, you know, which still actually only account for 38% of the book. You know, so there's probably still scope for those fully banked clients to continue to grow. And then maybe also another interesting one. For many years, Capitec didn't grow their loan book, so they had restricted credit appetite. So that actually grew 12% over this period. And then their net interest income grew by 23%. So part of the reason, you know, for the disconnect is that they had an increase in what's called lazy deposits. So these are clients that earn less than 2% on their daily banking balances. And so that causes their funding mix to improve. So that also caused that net interest margins to improve. And maybe another one I can call out is just the growth in transaction and commission income, which grew 14% over the period, and particularly in their VAS business unit, you know, where, for example, they, you know, cash send and other digital payments. So that actually grew about north of 30%. And they continue to introduce products on that. You know, so just to some of the products that they recently introduced, you know, it's cross-border money transfers. So that's typically actually a very profitable product for the banks. And they tend to charge quite a bit for that. So they've introduced that and probably we'll see them grow there. Airtime advances is another one. You know, so it's something they've introduced with their clients. And then lastly, they have a new mortgage venture with SA Home Loans. So all these will probably grow to meaningful revenue lines over time. I mean, all this has culminated in Capitec earning a 31% ROE. I'm saying that for many years, Capitec used to earn a 26, you know, a return on percent return on equity. And so what you're seeing is that they, as they adding more products and businesses, highly scalable, becoming more profitable. And so what that means actually is that you are now willing to pay more for that same book value because it's much more profitable. And so you've seen this increase in Capitec's price to book ratio in the valuation. And as you call out, that it's much higher than its peer group. But it also earns much higher profitability than its peer group, in some cases nearly as much as double. And so, you know, the I think it's a fair argument to be made that the valuation is justified. Often what tends to happen is that, you know, the as the business improves its profitability, you do get opportunities where the market hasn't quite recognized that the profitability is improving or is going to continue to improve. And so you get these short moments that you can buy it at a discount to this, to the higher level of profitability. So unfortunately, currently we feel as though it's run ahead of this again. But I'm sure many opportunities will come. I think it's important also to note that, you know, banking is cyclical. Get you know, interest rate hikes, and then bad debts get higher, and often the market panics, and so you do get these opportunities where one can nibble and buy Capitec.
Yeah, but I take your point. I mean, with an ROE of 31%, that price to book elevation is perhaps justified. And it is. I mean, it's ahead of Standard Bank in terms of market cap. It is an absolute monster, and in fact, only a little behind First Round. We'll leave it there. That's from Mark Nakabele, Perpetua Investment Fund Managers. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Is there value here? Robert says maybe it's kind of fully priced. Maybe there'll be some opportunity. But have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Tim Edwards. He's Managing Director, Index Investment Strategy at S&P. Tim, appreciate the time. The latest SPIVA index published by yourselves, South African Scorecard, is just out. First two questions. What is SPIVA and how long have you guys been doing this? Because by my memory, it's probably a couple of decades by now.
Hi, Simon. Thanks ever so much for having me on your show. So what indeed is SPIVA? Well, it's an acronym, actually, S-P-I-V-A, and it stands for S&P Index Versus Active. And it's a scorecard. What we do every 6 months is we provide an update to the industry, letting folks know how have active stock pickers, bond pickers been doing. And very specifically, there's a lot of data in there, but the one that gets the headlines is how many actively managed funds beat the index, how many lagged behind. So the latest statistics are running up to the halfway point of 2025, and our report was freshly published last week, giving a sense of where active managers have been doing well and where they haven't. And just last thing, you're right. It is actually 10 years since we started publishing the South Africa scorecard. We've been running our reports in the US for a little longer, over 20 years. But for 10 years now, we've been providing updated statistics, helping investors know what were their chances of beating the benchmark.
And that's the key point. And this is not about naming and shaming. You don't point fingers at individuals or fund managers. This is a scorecard, a sort of an aggregate. But the data comes and the data says fairly clearly that only about a quarter of the active managers locally are beating their relevant benchmarks indices.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, in the first half of 2025, you needed to be better than in the top quarter if you were a domestic stock picker.
Yeah.
The winds were blowing hard in the other direction. If you were benchmarked against the South Africa 50, which is kind of the mega cap names, the biggest companies, 92% of actively managed funds lagged behind in H1 2025. The biggest stocks were very hard to beat. If you take a broader perspective, take, you know, the whole South African market composite index and cap the largest names, it's a little bit better, but still pretty grim reading. 81% of managers underperforming in H1.
Is there some issue around, I mean, potential index concentration? I hear this a lot, and this is a factor of our index, the likes of NASPAS, Richemont. It's a factor of U.S. indices. We know about what's happening in the S&P 500. Is that a valid, I don't want to say excuse, but a valid thinking?
It's part of the dynamics. It's not all of it. So when you have periods when the largest stocks do better than everyone else, then capitalization-weighted indices will often beat traditional stock picking. There was more to it, or has been more to it in South Africa. What we actually saw is, yes, some of the biggest names did quite well, but not all of them. What we actually saw is, to make an analogy, if you have a group of people and 99 of them are average height, and one of them is an absolute giant, then it is hard to be above average because your average is pulled up by a couple of, you know, really, really big outsized returns. And that's also what happened in South Africa in H1. You had a few stocks that did spectacularly well, and they pulled up the market averages. And that actually meant that an unusually high proportion, 70% of stocks in the benchmark also underperformed the benchmark.
Oh, wow.
It was essentially hard times to be a stock picker. So we saw that, you know, coming through in the short-term data.
The short-term data, if we roll this over the longer term, and short-term bonds, we'll talk separately in a moment, because that seems to be a little niche in its own. You've got this out to 10 years, and the numbers change, but the trend broadly remains the same, where it's about a quarter, in some cases less, who are able to beat the index over the longer terms as well.
Yeah, the short-term numbers are driven by market dynamics. The long-term numbers are actually driven a little bit more by fees and survivorship, which we might also talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
So we do produce numbers running out to 10 years. Those are more structural. And indeed, over the long term, we are seeing, depending which index you compare it to, around three quarters more in the case of versus mega caps, two thirds in the case of the broad market. Mm-hmm. Underperforming the index. And I think that suggests not that it is impossible to find outperforming funds, but doing so is not easy. And the implication is sometimes people think that a passive approach, getting the market, is settling for average.
Yeah,
what our data suggests is it's not quite settling for average. It might in fact be considerably better than average.
I like that point. You mentioned survivorship. If I've got a fund and it's, I don't know, 5 years old and doing poorly, I close it. I fold it into another fund that perhaps is performing better. How do you manage that survivorship? Or is it just a case of as time goes out, the number gets smaller?
I mean, look, this is super important to our report. The concept here is imagine the choices that faced you 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And you need to take into account that many of the funds that were available 10 years ago are not available today. When I say many, in the case of domestic South African equity stock pickers, 40% of the funds that were available for sale 10 years ago are not available today. We count them as underperformers because at some point during the period they were merged or liquidated. And actually, as you go out to, you know, the longer term statistics, thinking about what was available 10 years ago is super important because it's not typically the best performing funds that are wound up. It tends to be the underperformers. And that means that if you're looking today at all the funds that have 10-year track records, many of them will have good track records, but they are the survivors. And that's an important bias, if you like, in the data that we control for in the way that we compile these reports.
Yeah. A quick last question. The short-term bonds, there's one space where active works. I mean, the data is that over all the periods, you've got more than half the active funds actually doing better than the representative indices.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And look, the point of producing this report is not necessarily to batch active or not. It's really important. If there's categories where the managers are doing well, we want to show people where it might be worth their time. Short-term bonds is one of those categories where we saw a majority of active managers outperform over the short term, over the medium term, and over the long term.
Yeah.
There is a mild qualifier to that, which is we've done some analysis looking at how managers outperform. And there is one minor qualifier to that, which is there is the opportunity, if you're in the sort of money market area or very short-term bonds, a cash-like area, you can take on a little bit more credit risk, or you can hold some longer dated bonds. Mm-hmm. That can generate outperformance, but it will give you a little bit more risk. And that's where we highlight in the short-term bond category, managers are beating the index, but many are doing so by taking on a little bit more risk. that's something to bear in mind when you're assessing active managers in the space.
Yeah, that's a great caveat in that. But we'll leave it there. Tim Edwards, Managing Director, Index Investment Strategy, S&P. Appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Kingsley Williams, CIO at Satrix. Kingsley, always appreciate the early morning time. The Satrix MSCI World ETF listed on the JSE, effective yesterday, I think. You've dropped your total expense ratio for 0.35% to 0.25%. It seems small. It's only 0.1%. It is significant. I suppose the first question, is this just as you sort of get size and efficiencies, you're able to reduce costs in a fund and pass it back to investors?
Yeah. Morning, Simon. Always great to speak with you. That's exactly right. The fund has been one of our flagships and has been extremely well supported by investors in our market. And part of Satrix's mission and purpose is to democratize investing, make it more accessible. And as the indexation leader in South Africa, it's incumbent on us to ensure that we deliver compelling products to our clients. And we've got a track record of having reduced fees on some of our other flagship funds in the past, the top 40 being the most notable one. I think that was back in 2017. Which was the same time that we actually launched this, the Satrix MSCI World ETF. And so now we're doing the same on this ETF to make its investment case even more compelling.
I want you to check my numbers. It's about 20 billion assets under management on the ETF. 0.1% it's 20 million rand that's going back to investors every year.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, I think the key thing to bear in mind is that, you know, tracking MSCI World, which many investors have as a benchmark in their portfolios if they're institutional investors, but tracking MSCI World gives you a very compelling investment outcome relative to you know, to any other fund that you might be considering. I think you were speaking earlier with the S&P team regarding, you know, their SPIVA report, and I mean their research has shown quite consistently that over the medium to long term, you're in a very good position tracking an index, and this is certainly the case with tracking MSCI World. So, what you know, you're basically a top quartile performer, but consistently a top quartile performer. And so, with this reduction in the total cost of the fund, it enhances that return prospect even further and makes the investment case even more compelling.
And it is. I mean, MSCI World, for those who are not sure, I mean, this is it's about, what, 1,400 odd holdings, 20 plus developed economies. I mean, obviously dominated by the US, no surprise that. But it is, as it says on the sticker, this is a global ETF covering no EMs. That isn't the all country world index, but 23 economies.
Exactly. And it's sort of the de facto benchmark that many investors use. And it offers a great diversifier for South Africans based here, investing in rands and on our local market, because when you convert those MSCI World returns in dollars back into rands and the currency effect that takes effect, especially when you have risk-off events, you know, you might find that our rand tends to come under pressure. Mm-hmm. We obviously haven't had that regime for this year, but in other regimes where the rand comes under pressure, that acts as a lovely cushion to the returns that you experience when you're investing in MSCI World. You tend to find that you know, those returns smooth out what you might be experiencing locally. So yeah, it's a great complement to any portfolio to have this exposure there, and obviously clients are now getting that at a much cheaper pricing point, which just bodes well for their net of fees returns.
And we saw that back in April, Liberation. Global markets were collapsing, the rand collapsed, and the ETF kind of sailed on as the two effects almost set each other off. For the record, we've got four of these listed. One investor's now at 0.4%, FNB 0.35%, Satrix 0.25%, and Signia 0.71%. Kingsley Williams, CIO, Satrix, appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. Yesterday we were chatting with Chantal Marx. The NetCap update was a good update, although, as she pointed out, a lot of it was around cost savings. But the stock was up some 4%. We asked you, is healthcare an attractive investment opportunity? Around half said no, sector lacks growth. A third said you're preferring offshore. Rest said yes, great sector. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. 25 years of ETFs.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.